And welcome to the program, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. No, we're not in Milwaukee. No, because here I am safely reporting to you from an undisclosed location deep behind the Orange Curtain. And thank goodness for that. Well, yeah, that's right. That's right. Seville Smith's sister wanted them to burn down the suburbs. Well, not in my house. Well, now, you know, you've heard the controversy. I don't want to. Do we just start by beating up CNN again? So CNN, again, here's what we do on this show. We try to go beyond the headlines. And you know, if you've just tuned into the bare minimum during the week, I will set you straight on Saturday and Sunday. Happy to do that. Performing my civic duty. So, if you've been living under a rock, here's what's been going on. Milwaukee went up in flames. And it's all over this kid, Seville Smith. Now, the guy got a, here's what happened. He had a stolen gun. He's in a confrontation with cops. He's told multiple times to drop the gun. He's holding the gun. And as he begins to raise the gun, he's shot by an officer multiple times in the arm and in the chest. And he dies. Now, the officer that fired the fatal shots, it so happens, is black himself. It's not something the media is talking about a whole lot, especially not CNN. Now, what I'm alluding to here with his sister, and his family members have all come out on the media, and they're, surprise, a broken family. Dad's in and out of jail. And we're going to talk about Patrick Smith, actually, because the father, surprisingly, I think, was really the most, it's the most powerful story within the story here. And I want to talk about that in a little bit. But the father gets up, he holds a press conference, the mother gets up, and then his sister, the decedent, his sister, her name is Sherelle Smith. Now Sherelle, she's... She holds a little impromptu press conference, and CNN covers it. Well, they don't cover all of it. That's the thing. Because what happens is Sherelle Smith starts to rant. I mean, it goes on for quite a while. She's ranting about how Don't burn the neighborhood. Don't, you know, this is ridiculous. We need our stores. We need our weave. I think she's referring to a hairdresser salon that does weaves. I like how she adds in the middle of it. I don't wear one, but you know, we need our weave. When I first heard it, I thought it was weed. I thought that's what she was talking about. But anyway. Do you ever put closed captions on TV when you're watching? I do all the time, because sometimes I'll have the sound off. I'm trying to do multiple things. So once again, the show was saved by closed caption. Otherwise, I'd be telling you here about how Seville Smith is calling to save the weed stores in the inner city. Well, at any rate, it's what she says after that that's the problem. And CNN, of course, doesn't report it at all, because that's what CNN does. They wanted to stick to the narrative that here's the sister of this poor kid that was shot by the cops, another victim, another black life that was wasted away by police aggression. And here is his wonderful sister calling for peace. The only problem is that right after she, well, do we have that clip? I want to play the actual clip of what was reported on CNN. And when this clip cuts off, by the way, is when they started on another story. So just, but let's play the clip.
Family and friends holding a vigil marked by prayers, with his sister calling for peace.
Don't bring the violence here and the ignorance here.
That's it. That's what they played. Well, CNN has apologized. And I'll tell you why. Because they got caught in it once more. You know, she says, don't bring that violence here. And immediately after that, what does she do? She says, take that violence, burn that, you know what, down in the suburbs. Take it to the white people. Burn their stuff down. Don't burn down our weave store. You can't make this stuff up. And I will tell you this as an editorial aside, that the minute that the facts do not line up with the left-wing narrative, with the left-wing emotional narrative, facts are disposed of. And that's really not what, especially not agreed, especially not on an election year, how it's supposed to be. So if you rely on CNN and other mainstream media outlets to inform you and to give you information and facts, trust me, they are editing, trimming, and in many cases deleting, just like some candidates do with their less than convenient emails, removing facts to fit their political narrative. So yes, Seville, burn that shiz down, Smith. Exactly. Burn down the suburbs. Well, Seville, I'll tell you this. Can't find this studio. I'll tell you. Well, so here's what's going on in the background, right? The officer's on administrative leave. He's receiving death threats. Most outlets are not reporting his name, but we do know who he is. And it's interesting because the most fascinating part of the backstory is that the officer and the kid, the guy that was shot, the criminal, the thug who's got a rap sheet as long as my arm, they went to the same high school. Now think about that. A tale of two minority youths. They're roughly the same age. I believe the officer's a year or two older. But family say that Seville Smith and the Milwaukee officer actually knew each other from high school. The officer knew him personally from high school, and he still shot him. Sherelle Smith told CNN on Wednesday, he didn't like my brother. Adding, the officer had a career, but my brother was more popular. He used to harass Seville. So, let's parse that out. Because family members are accusing the officer, without elaborating, that there was some sort of personal vendetta against Smith. And so this kid, and I was going to talk about the father, because these parents are split up. And the father actually gives a very interesting and I think thoughtful assessment of what happened. So his name's Patrick Smith. And he speaks to the media and he says, look, this was my fault. Here's what he says. What are we going to do now? Everyone is playing their part in the city. And then he goes, I had to blame myself for a lot of things, too. Because you know what? Your dad, he's your hero. And I played a very big part in my family's role model for them. And he's talking about himself. I'm being on the street, doing things of the street life, entertaining, drug dealing, and pimping. They're looking at their dad like, hey, he's doing all these things. And so this guy, Patrick Smith, admits, look, I was in and out of jail. I wasn't there for my kid. And when I wasn't a very good role model. Now he goes on and says some drivelous things about gun control and I think he's trying to say that white legislatures are pro-Second Amendment because they want to arm black people in the neighborhood so they shoot each other, or so that at least they're armed, and that gives the police an excuse to shoot them. And that is a very, I will tell you this, this is a very, very dangerous narrative. Do not, this should be an immediate trigger warning for liberal nonsense and hypocrisy when you hear that, well, you know what, it's, that's right, it's the Second Amendment people. Of course, they want minorities, they want people of color to have ready access to guns so that the police can shoot them. Which is, of course, absurd, and I'll explain why in a minute. But so this guy, his father, getting a little bit into that, but he really does admit that it's his life, and he goes, look, the guy, he reached for his gun. He goes, it's justifiable. And so what this whole thing comes down to, and this is what we're for the first time we are hearing it. We're hearing it from politicians, and not just Donald Trump, but we're hearing an honest assessment of race and of poverty and how it fits into this culture of violence. And it's not racism. What it is a complete deterioration of culture. And it's not a deterioration of culture that is external, caused by racist aggression, racist attitudes, white people keeping black people down. It's caused by an internal implosion in black communities across America. And that is simply the root of it. And so when we come back, I'll explain to you why and some of the statistics behind it. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rzhovsky. You'll find him very entertaining. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
All right. We're back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC, talking about Milwaukee, giving you the rundown on what's going on this week and some of the patent absurdities that are being repeated out there. So here's the myth. Because the whole premise that you have an inner city that is predominantly black, where a black man is shot by a black police officer, where there's a black chief of police, and black city council members, and black civic leaders, et cetera, that this is somehow the result of some kind of racist conspiracy. It's absurd. I mean, it is, because there's no statistical bearing out of any of this, right? So let's take a step back. So the guy that shot Seville Smith has got numerous run-ins with the police. And as we've talked about before, bottom line is if you are stopped by the police and you don't obey commands and you're armed or pose a threat to the police, they're going to shoot you. And there's nothing, absolutely nothing racist about that. The cop's prejudice at the end of the day is he wants to go home to his family. It's that simple. So, you know, it doesn't really matter if the cop is white and the perpetrator is black, or if the perpetrator is white, okay, and the police officer is black, or any combination of those things. But the truth of the matter is that the movement that is stirring behind the scenes here, that is agitating racial tension, is a movement that's, frankly, is surviving on this, is thriving on this. You know, Black Lives Matter. So we've heard a lot about it. And of course, the entire premise of it is ridiculous. If, and we've talked about this in past shows. You can get the podcast, I think maybe two, 3 weeks back on samnation.com. So we talked about the premise of the Black Lives Matter goes back to the shooting in Ferguson, Michael Brown. You remember the first protests that we saw, Black Lives Matter's protests, and their hands up, don't shoot. That's their slogan. And the entire thing I explained was absurd. I mean, Michael Brown, the whole Black Lives movement, therefore, tracing back its lineage to a complete falsehood. Michael Brown did not put his hands up. In fact, the person that testified to him to that was later discredited. She completely recounted her testimony. So this lady lied under oath and then recanted. This Michael Brown, if you'll remember, he assaulted a store clerk. He grabbed the police officer's gun. Well, I'm sorry. Look, if you're a police officer, you move to arrest somebody, they grab your gun, you're going to fear for your life. And especially when there's an enormous weight, height, and strength difference. So even after being investigated by Loretta Lynch and the full force of the racist Obama Justice Department, the officer in the Michael Brown shooting is cleared. There's two investigations. There are a police investigation and a state investigation. He's cleared. But Black Lives Matter is this organization that has since then only been gaining steam. But the fundamental flaw with it is that you can't have an organization, you can't base a movement on a lie. You remember New Orleans, the young man, the black man that was running away from the white cop and shot in the back. Now that is objectively wrong, and if it was fueled by racism, it is what it is, and it speaks for itself. But you know, this premise somehow, see, the Black Lives Matter people are joking. You know, there's that restaurant that got into trouble. Did you hear about this? They what did they do? They printed up shirts that say, it was an Italian restaurant, and they printed up shirts saying Black Olives Matter. Now, I personally think that black olives are disgusting, but nevertheless, that's what they did. And now they're in all sorts of hot water. You can't even joke about it. Come on. You can't even joke about it. But isn't the premise, if Black Lives, the whole premise of Black Lives Matter movement, of course, is that there is this whole segment of the population, there are people among us. Maybe they're not vocal, but there are people among us that really believe that Black Lives don't matter. Right? Well, that's it, right? I mean, now do you actually believe that? Do you actually believe that there's this whole broad silent majority out there that's conspiring against minorities, looking to eradicate swaths of black youth by having police shoot them summarily in the streets? Because that's crazy. That's insane. And so then when you combine that premise with the fact that this movement is just ginning up, fomenting tensions where none should belong with this guy in Milwaukee, Seville Smith, by his own father's admission, his father is a total loser. His father is in and out of jail. His father is a pimp. His father's a drug dealer. His father walks around and waves weapons. And his father admits, hey, I'm in and out of jail. And when I am around, this is what my kid sees. And I got to take some responsibility for that. Finally, because if you recall, most disgusting thing was Trayvon Martin. That's another one. And you have a president, too, might I add, a president, too, that is stoking these tensions. So if you're just tuning in, look, we're talking about Milwaukee, but in a broader sense of what these riots show. And they show two things. One, the cause of the violence is not racism is not white people versus black people. The cause of this is, in my opinion, right? We've actually got black people versus black people. Now, let me explain that. If you go back in Milwaukee's history, a lot of hay is being made, and you've heard about it. You've heard, well, you know, they've been controlled by Democrats since 1908. So that's it. And if you tune into MSNBC, they'll say, oh, you know, these Republicans, they're just there. They want to blame it on Democrats. Guffaw, guffaw, guffaw. It's so funny. Well, not so fast. Not so fast, MSNBC. And I'll tell you why. Because it is, now I know this is a big word for our friends on the left. Statistically, it's a truth. You know, America's 10 most dangerous cities, when they're measured by federal crime statistics, and these are federal crime statistics, by the way, that are being managed and have been managed for the last 8 years by a Democrat, by a Democratic administration. So these are accurate statistics. And they have all one thing in common. They're all led politically by Democrats, by Democratic institutions. And I'm not just talking about city councilmen and aldermen and that kind of thing. I'm specifically talking about mayors. You want to go through the list? I mean, you got Detroit, number one, right? It's the most dangerous city. I don't think they haven't had a Republican mayor since 1961. You know that? Well, what about Oakland, right? We got Oakland. It's hour north. Get on a plane, fly over there. Second most dangerous city in America. Democrats been in charge since 1977. And you go down the list, and they're, you know, all these cities, Democratic controlled, and then you get to one, you go, but Sam, where's New York on this list? You know, I always hear about New York, and it's the biggest city, and it's, well, it's interesting you bring that up. Because, you know, in 1990, there was this big, giant boom. You might have heard it. It's like a giant explosion. What was it? Political explosion. I should probably make that clear. Well, after, I think, like 50 years of Democrats being in charge, a guy named, what was his name? Oh, I don't know. Rudy Giuliani. That's right. Rudy Giuliani gets elected mayor. And you know the guy before him? Immortal, what was he? Wasn't there a funny episode in Seinfeld about him? Dinkins? Mayor Dinkins? There was a funny episode. What was his name? Lloyd Brown? Anyway, so Dinkins is mayor of New York. And he was a total wuss. Okay, he's like, he's just a total wuss. And in fact, Dinkins at one point, he was so anti-police that his administration put out a brochure. I don't know if you remember this. This made national news at the time. But he put out a brochure that told people that there won't be peace until people stop running young men of color off the streets. Can you imagine that? You're the chief executive of a city, of America's maybe most important city. And you are putting out literature that is openly hostile to the police. You're in charge of the police. Fix the problem. But mark my words. You know this. You listen to this program. Democrats and liberals don't want to fix problems. They want to talk about problems. And when they can't have enough to talk about, they make stuff up. And so here you have, and so here's what I want to do. I want to tell you what New York is the best example. Rather than rattling off a list of all the cities that are all messed up because they've had Democrats since kingdom come, let me tell you about New York, because New York fixes its problem and then it gets bad again. And I want to tell you why. Back after this, Sam Rejofsky. Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rejofsky. Now, what Sam is, is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Now, we've been talking about crime a little bit here and in relation to the greater topic of conversation about Milwaukee, the riots, racism, et cetera, et cetera. And have you heard the, this is an interesting aside to all of this. Have you heard about crime statistics in Walmart? Apparently, Walmarts across the country, and I don't have it here. I don't know where I read it this week, but it's stunning because, they took one city somewhere. I don't know if it was in Nebraska, but it was in some innocuous flyover state. Oh, maybe it was Tulsa, Oklahoma. But at any rate, they had something like 5,000 police calls to a Walmart in the city. And 2 miles away, there's a Target. And the Target, by contrast, had something like 100 calls total. And the officer, I wish I had the story here in my stack of stuff, but the story was great because they actually have a full-time officer now. The police department has a full-time police officer assigned to the Walmart. And his colleagues, they didn't say that they made fun of him, of course, but I think that was it. They were all, because they call him, his name is Ramos or something like that, but they call him Officer Walmart. Poor guy, he shows up at the station and they call him Officer Walmart. And it's endless. I mean, and the thing is, it's not just about shoplifting. There are assaults, murders even, kidnapping attempts. So when you see the site People of Walmart, it ain't no accident. Okay, so I'm bringing this up because, and I want to clarify, I'm drawing no relationship between this and the BLM conversation. I'm just putting that out there right now. I'm not. Diaper-wearing monkey gets loose, scuffles with Walmart employee in parking lot. Apparently, in Lancaster, Ohio, a pet monkey escaped in a Walmart parking lot. You'll be surprised to know he escaped from an RV. Now, there's a video taken by a bystander who's driving by. Can you imagine you're driving through a Walmart parking lot? You just think, you've just survived the experience of being inside the Walmart. But now you're driving through the parking lot, and lo and behold, what you see is a chimp attacking that poor person that has to move the shopping carts. This is already the most thankless job on the planet, isn't it? If you're the guy collecting shopping carts. And now to boot, you're attacked by a chimp. So the video's great. We got to post it. We'll post it on samnation.com. But the chimp starts throwing punches at the guy, at the shopping cart guy. And then the woman, the owner runs up and she frantically tries to get the monkey off. And she's hysterical because she's worried that if the monkey bites somebody, that the authorities police are going to come, animal control are going to come, and they're going to take the monkey away from her. So it's all about no bites. So the police, apparently Officer Walmart responded to the scene, took a report and determined that there were no bites, that it was just a grab. Which apparently is permissible. You're allowed to get grabbed by a monkey, just not bitten by one. As a side note, I will tell you that the Department of Agriculture is trying to identify the woman to find out if the monkey has been properly registered. Well, I don't know. It's not the same monkey. It's a different monkey. It's a different monkey. So, there it is. Now, I'm assuming if that monkey bit the woman that what she'd have to do is call Sweet James. Well, that's assuming she listens to the program and knows that Sweet James is the only attorney to call in the event of an injury or accident. So, that's true. James And you'll know if once you call and you talk to him and you get to know him, you'll know why his friends call him Sweet James. Because Attorney James Bergener, when you call his office, you'll realize he's a champion. He's a victor. He will fight for you. He likes to win. And when he has, over $400 million won for his clients so far, and he's not done. And that could be you. So the most important thing is, you know, would you really trust a monkey's insurance? I don't think so. I wouldn't. I'd call Sweet James. And you want him because, you know, well, that's right. The insurance company, they're just going to monkey around. I had to. I'm sorry. If you have Attorney Sweet James Bergener on your side, he will make sure you're taken care of. He will talk to you about anything. He's going to look after you and your case. And he's got a great team. This is the most important thing. There's great infrastructure built into his practice. And there are people that do specific things that will ensure that every aspect of your case is taken care of. Now, I was actually talking. I'm going to give a brief aside here because I was talking to Sweet James this week. And I said, hey, what do you want me, you know, tell me, give me an update. Talk to me a little bit about stuff. And he told me something interesting. You know, there's lawyers out there that actually will track down people, you know, after an accident. They'll actually track. That's right. You know, they find somebody on the inside of a hospital or something. They'll get your records. Of course, they're not supposed to do that, but they do that kind of thing. And he said, you know, never. And this is true. Don't ever trust a lawyer that calls you. Remember that. Because there are a lot of shady lawyers out there that do that kind of thing. Don't if you're getting a call from a lawyer, that lawyer's desperate. That lawyer went to great lengths to find you. What you want to do is you want to find your own lawyer. And when you do that, make that guy Sweet James. Now, how do you find him? Easy. SweetJames.com or call 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. All right. That is crazy, though. Both about the monkey and about those lawyers that call people. And I've seen that. I know somebody who left the hospital and then all of a sudden getting calls from all these shady people. And unbelievable. Well, if you're just tuning into the show and catching us midway, don't worry. We got plenty to go, plenty of good stuff. And we're talking about Black Lives Matter, the movement, and the great lie. Now, the great lie is that, you know, that the root of all of this, you know, the basically the essence of this conflict is racial prejudice, income inequality. And that, you know, we need more Democrats. We need more Democratic policies. We need more welfare. We need more spent on education. And if you really think, by the way, on that spent on education nonsense, if you really believe in that, you should look at LA Unified. So I live in Orange County. My kid goes to one of the best public schools around. Public schools. Now, what makes that public school great? You know what? They spend less per student than LA Unified does. It is not about the money. You know what it is? You know what makes my kid's school better than even another kid's school in the same district? Parent involvement. Because you know what? And if you're a teacher and you're listening, first of all, I love you. Thank you for everything that you do. And if you're a teacher in LA Unified, you deserve a medal. Because I will tell you, there is nothing where you've got, in order to have a class of 30 kids, oh, let's make it about class size, 20 kids. Which if you don't have kids, I'll tell you, that's like a very small class size. Very small. If you've got 20 kids, and they all come to school and their fathers, like Saville Smith's dad, Patrick, who I told you about last hour, who laments the fact that he pimped, entertained. I don't know. What did that entertain thing mean? What does he mean by that? You have any idea? Entertained, in and out of jail, running drugs, okay? Flashing guns. He laments this. He says, hey, I was a bad role model for my kid. If you have a classroom full of kids who have a Patrick Smith for a father, come from broken homes. These kids aren't going to sit in your class and listen to you. Because you know what? They never had a dad. They never had a father. Who, when they mouthed off to their mother, that father stepped in. You say that one more time, I'm going to smack you. Let me tell you the one ultimate sin in the Sam Nation household. Disrespecting mom. You do not disrespect mom. And guess what? All three of my kids know it. And I won't get into details because but my kids know you do not disrespect mom. And how that establishes that you respect authority. That you respect women. Don't tell me that 20 ungovernable, out of control, criminal kids in an inner city classroom is somehow a failing of not enough tax dollars being spent on those kids. You can talk to any teacher anywhere in any of those 10 cities that were on this list that are run by Democrats into the ground, any one of those teachers, and they will tell you, I cannot teach to a classroom of kids that don't respect me. And they don't respect me. They don't respect the teacher. I'll tell you this is so important to me. They don't respect the teacher because they weren't taught respect at home. And that the problem in the home is not the result of racism. It's not. It's the result. It goes back to 1960s. You had two-parent households. Black families were doing great. 80%, 90% of black families had two parents at home in the 1950s. What happened in 1960? Lyndon Johnson's Great Society, welfare, the whole kit and caboodle, the state replaced black fathers and black mothers in homes and this I'll tell you, is the root of everything that happened. And I'm going to tell you, you're going to be surprised by this. You know who's funding Black Lives Matters? Well, it's not just George Soros. It's a foundation with ties to a major American car manufacturer. You'll be surprised by this. I'll tell you about that when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Yeah, that's right. There are no diaper-wearing monkeys loose in this studio. This ain't no Walmart. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And, well, we're having a frank conversation about race. And, well, right. I get it. I get it. This isn't easy. But we here on this show, we always stick with the facts. This is not about emotions. This is not about what we feel in our guts and about feelings and all that. Because that is where the left always wants to go. Whenever you're having a discussion about anything, you want to have some kind of a debate. And I'm willing to debate. I'm willing to engage in conversation. In fact, I had one of these. I was in Utah last week. I got to be careful here. I'll tell you, my brother-in-law is a elected official in Utah, and he's a Democrat, and so you know his kids are all super adorable and great, and they're also very pro-Hillary, although I suspect deep down inside they really are not that excited about Hillary. Okay, you've got Democratic, friends, and you say, so Hillary, how are you? Yay. I always love to tease them. And they just sort of freeze. You know, they kind of look like they've just had a little mini stroke. And then anyway, the kids, so we're all sitting at at a dinner one night. And his kids began to, well, no, I don't know. Maybe my son started it. I'll take blame for it. It was my kid. He says something pro-Trump. Now, my son's 8, right? And his cousins, they have twins that are 12. So there's a little bit of an age difference. So the 12-year-olds begin kind of taunting him with Hillary slogans, to which my kid, of course, responds, you know, well, she ought to be in jail. And then basically all hell breaks loose. And well, I'm only bringing this up because you know you can have debates, and but they're never about the facts. So of course it's debate about Hillary. Well, here are the facts. Here's what happened with her email. It's a crime. Tell me. And my brother-in-law is a lawyer by training. So this is a lawyer on lawyer conversation. Explain to me how these facts don't constitute the violation of this law. Explain that to me. Here are the elements of the elements of the crime, A, B, and C, and here's what she did. So either you don't think she did that, which in which case we can talk about that, but don't. No, well, it's just a Republican conspiracy. It's just no. Okay. And that's exactly it. And then, well, what about Trump? He hates Muslim people. Oh, really? That's the best you've got on Trump? I mean, there's some crazy things about Trump that he hates Muslims. Muslims is just not, it's not real. And speaking of which, I'll take a brief detour here into politics, and we'll talk more about this on Sunday, but Trump had a great, I see a reboot in his campaign, and I see, and not in the CNN, oh, another reboot for Trump, but I see his policy really tightening up when it comes to immigrants. And I spent one afternoon of pure misery listening to watching CNN agonize about this. Or it wasn't, I think it was MSNBC, but they were agonizing about Trump's loyalty quiz. Because Trump came out and said, you know, look, what I want to do is if we admit people into this country, they need to be vetted. He called it an extreme vetting. And he says, look, you've got to be open to gay rights. You've got to be open to gender equality and religious freedom. We don't care what you believe. You've just got to be okay with other people believing other stuff. And I couldn't believe my ears. Because here, the liberal establishment media is going into full meltdown over someone saying, hey, as a precursor to you coming into our country, we kind of think you ought to be an open-minded person. Be tolerant of other people, of other people's opinions, religious beliefs, and lifestyle. Or is it a... I feel like I'm in a parallel universe. No? I mean, how is it possible? I'm watching a bunch of libs on TV all having a conniption fit. They're getting the vapors. They don't know. They're short-circuiting because a Republican has just done a complete end run around them and taken on tolerance as a major policy talking point, and they don't know what to do with it except to say, extreme vetting? I don't think that's... that's not possible. This is... That's all it was. Trump proposed creating a new ideological test. You know, hey, what do you think about religious freedom, gender equality, gay rights? And he also suggested here, and this could be a great thing. Why not look at people's social media? Maybe we ought not have somebody come to this country who thinks the Taliban is just a fine and dandy organization. And so when people say, well, you know, that Orlando shooter, you know, that guy, I mean, he was an American. I mean, he's a kid who grew up here. You know, I mean, You know, that Trump, that mean Mr. Trump, racist Trump. You know, if he had his way, nobody like him would be here. Well, no, that's not what Trump is saying. And finally, I think he's finally distilled it to something that not only passes a constitutional test, but is obviously common sense. Which is that if, like the Orlando shooter's father, you think that the Taliban is a great fine and dandy organization, maybe you shouldn't be here. So if you're just tuning in, we're digressing a little bit and talking about Trump and his reboot. I'm going to talk more about this on Sunday because I think there's some great stuff going on, and I have an idea of what I can give you, a little bit behind the scenes insight into what happened in Trump's campaign from that 2 week period. And I want to take some time to do that because I'm always curious. I always want to know why. Why is it that he went through that week and a half of pure crazy, and now he's back on narrative sharp? And it's a formula that works. And before I talk about his speech in Milwaukee, because we were talking about earlier in the program, and if you missed any part of it, please, we covered a lot of good stuff. Go to samnation.com and download the podcast, which you ought to be subscribing to anyway. But download the podcast if you missed it, because we're talking about Milwaukee, the riots, and what caused them. And it's not the shooting death of this kid. This thug kid who's armed with the gun, the cop shoots in self-defense. It's not because of that. It's a culture problem. And the culture problem is not so much caused by racism, but it's because of the state stepping in loco parentis, which is Latin for in the place of parent. Yes, that's right. In the 1960s, I was talking about this right before the break. In the 1960s, Lyndon Johnson created the Great Society, right? It was atoning for Vietnam, right? That's my take on it. The guy wanted to leave behind a legacy that wasn't just, you know, tens of thousands of dead Americans, okay? He wanted to leave a legacy. And in so doing, gave us the biggest, most destructive cultural shift our country has ever experienced. Because wouldn't it, if you're tracking black culture in America from the end of slavery to 1960, black culture was up and coming. And arguably, back then, there was real racism. There was institutional racism. I mean, it wasn't just racial attitudes. There were racial laws. You had segregation. You had horrible, unspeakable things. Real injustice. And all of a sudden, the cure, or one of the cures, supposedly, is welfare. And what happens? Welfare supplants the role of parents earning, providing for their families. All of a sudden, poor families, and not just black families, white families too, can make do without a father. Moms can have multiple kids with multiple fathers. And it creates a devastating cycle of poverty. And this Black Lives Movement, folks, I'm going to tell you, it's so destructive, it's based on a complete lie. This has nothing to do with hands up, don't shoot. And it's actually turning into a giant cash cow. You know, the Ford Foundation. Now, they've divested themselves of all their Ford stock, but this is an organization founded by the Ford family. It's the second largest charitable foundation with about 12, I think it's got a 12 or so billion dollar endowment. And they quietly created a new group called the Black-Led Movement Fund, the BLMF. And they're funding Black Lives Matter. They gave a contribution of $100 million. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of This reminds me of, you know, it's like Jesse Jackson. You got people that, and the whole Democratic Party, there are people that make money off of other people's misery. There are people that, like Jesse Jackson, okay, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, that live off of this cycle of poverty. They'd be irrelevant if things got better. So I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow. Please tune in. Sam Rudzowski, Sam Nation, tomorrow, 6 p.m. on Talk Radio, 790 KBC. See you tomorrow.